Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the At-Large Ad Hoc Working Group on the Transition of U.S. Government Stewardship of the IANA Function on Tuesday, the 4th of November, 2014 at 1700 UTC. On the English channel, we have Jean-Jacques Supernaut, Alan Greenberg, Olivia Krebin-LeBlanc, Gordon Tillicup, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Shun OGDG, Yasuchi Kitamura, Eduardo Diaz, Loris Taylor, Devin Nanti-Luxing, Jimmy Schultz, and Leon Sanchez. On the Spanish channel, we have Fatima Cambronero and Alberto Soto. We have apologies from Thomas Lowenhaupt. From staff, Heidi Ulrich will be joining us shortly, and myself, Terry Agnew. Our Spanish interpreter today will be Veronica. I would like to remind all participants to please state their name not only for transcription purposes, but also for our Spanish interpreter. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Terry. And have we missed anyone on the roll call? Doesn't look like it. It does look like it because Leon Sanchez has put his hand up. But Leon, you are already accounted for. Leon? And I see thanks in the chat. Okay, let's get going then, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this 1.5 hour call. We've got a lot of things to discuss. There's been a lot going on in this past week. And so we'll look at the charter quickly of the accountability working group. We'll then be having a quick review of any movement on the IANA coordination group. A review of the cross-community working group work to develop an IANA stewardship transition proposal. As you know, there was a call just just a couple of hours ago, and then we'll be looking a little bit more deeply into the work of the RFP sub-working groups of that cross-community working group, and going into looking at building our own at-large position. That's the plan for the call today. Are there any amendments or additions to the agenda? I don't see anyone put their hand up or shout out, so the agenda is approved. And we can go immediately to the review of the action items of our last conference call. That was on the 28th of October. They're all done except one, which is not marked as being done. That's for Eduardo Diaz to check the status of RFP2C and RFP3. I know that Eduardo is on the call, but maybe we can leave this update until afterwards when we reach that part during our call agenda. Apart from this, all of the other action items have been completed.
And Olivier, this is Terry.
Yes, Terry, please.
Pardon the interruption. I do have a quick update on action item 6. Alice did get back to us with some information.
Okay. Please go ahead then.
Certainly. She let us know about the next 3 upcoming ICG calls, which will be on Wednesday, the 12th of November, the 26th of November, which is a Wednesday, and also Wednesday, the 10th of December, all at different times. And she also provided us a landing page for the ICG, and I'll put that all in the chat.
Okay, thank you very much for this, Terry. And question, would it be possible to actually put these on one of our own wiki pages? I think that probably would be helpful.
Certainly.
So we can track things around. That probably will be easy. Eduardo Diaz, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Eduardo. I just missed something. Do you want me to talk about this action item now or later?
Yes, thank you, Eduardo. No, I suggest that we discuss this later when we reach the relevant section during our agenda. We have a section discussing RFP2C, RFP3, and all of the different RFPs, so that probably be easier. Any other comments on any of the action items that we have here before our very eyes? I see no one with their hand up, so let's move to the next part of our agenda. And the next part is the review of the quick update, on the charter of the Accountability Working Group. Both Tejani Benjamin and Leon Sanchez were our representatives on this. And so I'm not sure if I see Tejani on the call, but I certainly see Leon Sanchez. So, Leon, would you be able to take us through this, please?
And this is Terry from staff. We're dialing out to Leon as you are requesting him to speak. If you could just give us a moment.
Okay, thank you. We'll ask that.
Hello, everyone. Do you hear me?
Listed, just to let everyone know, if you see your name listed along any of the parts later on in the RFPs, for example, please be sure that you're dialed in at the correct time. But over to you, Leon Sanchez.
Yes, thank you, Olivier. So we've had so far 4 meetings, 5 meetings of this drafting charter team. And Tijani just sent yesterday, I believe, the final version and the red line version of the proposed charter. The main aspects of this charter that I can highlight is that there are 2 work streams dealing with those things that need to be solved before the IANA function transition takes place. And the other one is focusing in those subjects or those areas in which the work doesn't need to be finalized before having this transition. So there will be also a need to designate members to the working group, to the cross-community working group, and there is a minimum of 2 representatives for the chartering ACSOs and a maximum of 5. So this would take us to somewhere like the previous cross-community working groups that have already been filled by members of the at-large community and the ALEC. And, I don't know if you have any questions on the subject or the scope of the charter. There are some questions posted in this charter that are the main focus of the working group, but they are not exhaustive. They are just initiative, and they are not supposed to constrain the working group's work to those, to answering those questions, but just to serve as a guide to further develop the work of the working group. So I don't know, Olivier, if you need or you have any questions.
Thank you very much for this, Leon. And the floor is indeed open for questions now. And Alan Greenberg has his hand up. Alan, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. Leon, is there anything in the charter that you have any reservations about that, you know, we should make an objection to or attempt to do an amendment at this point? Or are you happy to believe, you and Tijani believe, that this is a good document for the ALEC to approve?
Well, I believe it's a good document. I'm happy with it. I'm not sure. I think, as far as I understand, Tijani is also happy with this document. I don't see any point in which we should make any reservations or objections. But of course, this needs to be circulated to the community, and if anyone raises his hand and wants to raise any concern, of course we will be happy to take it to the drafting charter team.
And perhaps not get it, that amendment charter adopted by the other groups as happened last time. No, I was just making sure that there was nothing that either of you had raised on the chartering group that was, you know, essentially vetoed that you were unhappy with. So I'm glad that that's not the case. Thank you.
No, not so far, Alan. We raised some concerns. Tijani made some points on the draft charter, and they were considered and included. So as far as I understand, everything should work out.
Thanks very much for this, Leon. And next we have Fatima Cambronero. Fatima, you have the floor.
Fatima speaking. Thank you very much, Olivier. This is Fatima for the record. I have a question regarding this draft. I read, and there is something which is not clear to me, there are two paragraphs referred to the expert groups that might be appointed besides or in addition to the members of the working group. My question is who will define the concept of expert, and what are the requirements to be an expert, and who will be in charge of appointing those expert groups? This is in addition to the members of the group. This is not clear to me when I read the draft. So could you please summarize, please? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Fatima. This is Leon Sanchez again. Well, the expert advisors are considering the draft charter as an aid to the cross-community working group. And there is no clear mechanism, as you clearly state, as to which is the definition of expert and who is going to designate these advisors. What I understand is that these advisors would be defined by the same working group, and in that sense they would be called for advice, of course, to the working group.
Thanks for this, Leon. Olivier speaking. Are there any other questions or comments on this? So seeing no one put their hands up, I think they certainly, with regards to the feedback, if neither you, Leon, nor Tijani have found anything absolutely wrong with this charter, I guess the next thing that we will be looking to receive is to have the charter sent to the ALAC, and then the ALAC has to approve it. Is that the way forward?
That is correct, Olivier. As we did with other draft charters before, the next step would be to send it to the AACs and SO chairs and have it approved or, of course, opposed, which I don't see why it would be a problem for the ALAC to support this charter, since all things have been addressed.
Okay, thank you, Leon. Olivier speaking. And just to make sure again, this draft that you have sent us or that Tijani has sent us is really the final draft. So we could send this to the ALAC now for ALAC members to start reading and to start looking through it. Is that correct?
It is the last version we have in hand. I don't have any knowledge as to if there is going to be any changes, but this is supposed to be the final version.
Okay, thank you for this, Leon. Olivier speaking. Alan Greenberg, you're next.
Yeah, just a comment. Listening to Bart on the last call, on the CWG call, he was giving the dates when the other groups are going to be meeting to approve the charter, and it sounds like it's probably going to be a good 2 to 3 weeks into November before the charter gets approved by most of the groups. We then have the inevitable couple of weeks of administrative process discussions. There's the issue of appointing the experts, as has already been discussed. That sounds like we're not actually going to start meeting until close to Christmas, when things stop for a while, and by the time we come off of the Christmas break, it's almost time for us to deliver something to the ICG, or getting awful close to it. Is there really any possibility that we're going to be able to get this done? I'm asking Leon, was this discussed at all in the chartering process?
Thank you, Alan. This is Leon Sanchez. Yes, the times are very tight, and our aim is to have it finished fighting deadline. So I don't see much space for error here. We must meet the deadlines, and we must have this finished as programmed.
Good. I hope you have a magic wand to help it happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, everyone. It's Olivier speaking. So I don't know whether it is the remit of this working group to have an action item to ask Tijani and Leon to send this to the ALAC, but as we have the chair of the ALAC on the call, I would make a suggestion that this charter gets sent to the ALAC, since it appears to be the final version, as soon as possible, and then perhaps during the next ALAC call or even prior to the next ALAC call, a vote of the ALAC could take place to ratify the charter. So at least people will have time to read it rather than just being given 48 hours and then asking to read it quickly. Alan Greenberg, you have the floor.
Yeah, the chair of the ALAC was waiting to ask that question about whether the drafting committee members were happy with it before forwarding to the ALAC, and that will be done almost immediately. And I'm planning to take an online vote, since our meeting is not going to be held till the end of the month.
Fantastic. Hey, thank you very much.
Olivier or Alan, this is Heidi.
Hello, Heidi.
Hi, just a really quick question. Should that draft be put on a wiki page so it can be sent to the ALAC? You know, and any comments can be made, or if you want just
if that can be done quickly, I'll include the link in my message.
Okay, it can be done quickly.
Okay, and that was, for the transcript, that was Alan that spoke earlier with Heidi. So that's fine. Thanks very much for this. Let's go on then to agenda item number 3, the review of the ICG, the IANA Coordinating Group. Has there been any movement since the last time that we spoke last week? And I know that there was a call of the ICG, and was there? I can't remember whether there was one. But for this, I think we can have an update, a quick update. We've got 10 minutes. I believe that Jean-Jacques Subrena is with us, and Mohamed El-Bashir hasn't made it yet here, if I can see the list of attendees. But Jean-Jacques, would you be pleased able to provide us with an update on the ICG activities?
Yes, Jean-Jacques, trying out the microphone. Can you hear me, Olivier and colleagues?
Very clearly indeed, Jean-Jacques. Hello? Please proceed forward.
Oh, good. Good, because I have a pair of earphones with a microphone. Good, so unfortunately, I don't have anything to report because the members of the ICG have been occupied over the past week simply clearing up some little matters in the margins. So I have nothing to report. You remember the last ICG meeting was brief and was given over entirely to questions related to the selection of the independent secretariat. So that is continuing. I will not mention any names, of course, but simply to let you know that there had been a call for some further information about possible or potential or perceived conflicts of interest, and that has been worked on. And so we should now be very close to submitting a name or two names to the whole ICG for a final choice. On the other developments, I'm afraid there's nothing to report except that, of course, like everyone else, we were following the information from ICANN about the change of location for ICANN 52 from Marrakesh in Morocco to Singapore. As far as I know, the ICG will be therefore transporting itself to Singapore as well. There may be a formal vote on this by the ICG. That has not occurred yet, but I think that for all intents and purposes, I can say that we will be following the caravan. And that, Olivier, is all I have to report, but I'm open to questions or comments.
Thank you very much for this, Jean-Jacques. And the question is, are there any questions on your report and on the activities of the ICG? Sean Ojedeji.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Sean Ojedeji for the Transcript Record. Thank you, Jean-Jacques, for the report. I'm just two things I'd like to clarify. You said the process for the independent secretariat is still ongoing. I don't understand. Is it until the reports start coming to ICG that when the secretariat will actually be active? Because it looks like we are almost in the middle of the process, and secretariat is not ready by now. So does that sound as a concern for the ICG in any way? My second question is in relation to the conflict of interest. Has there been any recent issues that perhaps created such a call for further description or further declaration of people's interest on the ICG list? Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank
over
you.
To you, Jean-Jacques.
Thank you, Sean. This is Jean-Jacques listening to Sean. Two points. The first one was about the calendar. Yes, I think that this has taken a bit longer than was expected or hoped for, and we should be coming to a decision point within a few days. Your second question was how come, or what was the reason for this talk about conflicts of interest? There was no very specific concern. It was a matter of principle that had not been brought up at the beginning with sufficient clarity, and which one of the members of the selection subcommittee, that's myself, thought that for the sake of clarity and to be completely transparent and accountable especially, then we had to make a further check about conflicts of interest. Now, please note, Sun, that when I say conflicts of interest, it is not necessarily a proven conflict of interest. It is a potential, a true, or even simply a perceived conflict of interest, and that's what we're working on. And you will understand that at this stage, I cannot give you any further details, because that would need to give names and therefore to reveal the candidates on the shortlist, and that is that would not be proper for the selection process. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Jean-Jacques. Any other questions on the ICG process? It doesn't look like there are any. Jean-Jacques, we've got the list of the next calls, just to remind us. So the next one is on the 12th of November, is that correct?
Hang on just a moment. This is Jean-Jacques. Hang on just a moment. I'm checking on my
next ICG. Well, Perry has just spoken to us about this. So
yes, so the next one is on 12th November at 2000 UTC.
Yeah, it is in the chat.
And then, yes, and then the one after that is Wednesday, 26th of November at 0200 UTC.
Yeah, Jean-Jacques Olivier speaking. Do you have any idea of the discussions that will take place on the 12th of November? In other words, are ICG members active in the different communities? Will they refer back to the work and provide updates about the work in each one of the different communities or not? Or is the ICG pretty much just waiting for the proposals to arrive on their desk, and until then it's just going to be very slow moving?
Yes, thank you for the question, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques. My take is that between now and the 15th of January 2015, which is the latest date by which we expect to receive the contributions from communities, we are in observation mode. In other words, as individual members, we are in touch with various parts of the community to try to follow what's happening and to try to anticipate on what we'll have to do later on in assembling the transition plan. For instance, in my case, I will not be participating directly in any of the discussions, because I think that I have to be able to receive instructions from the ALAC as your representative, and I keep myself informed by following the discussions, some of the meetings, but I'm not going to take an active part. But that's a personal choice, but I'm ready to change it if so that has to be some other way.
Okay, thank you for this, Jean-Jacques. Sean Odedeji again.
Yeah, thank you, Olivier. Thank you, Jean-Jacques. I just want to pick on Jean-Jacques on that particular comment. So my question is, there are some members of the ICG who are actually involved with other communities, within other communities, who are actually also making comments. And sometimes I'm not actually in any way criticizing their comments, but the fact is that there are views that they believe that should happen. So, is ICG in any way authorizing such extent of interrogation from the member of the ICG on these different communities? And is there anything you mentioned that you are not actually going to be making any contribution? Is there anything that is kind of restricting you? Are you actually restricted by the at large? Or you are restricted because you have discussed it in the ICG not to do so? These are the three things I'd like to clarify, because I want to know the basis by which some of these members of the ICG are discussing on the different policies. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean, for this. Jean-Jacques Subrenin.
Thank you, Olivier. Thank you, Sean. This is Jean-Jacques speaking. There is no clear-cut rule, as far as I'm aware, which asks for ICG members to intervene or to not intervene in various working groups. I think the overall idea is that we should, as a group, be as well informed as possible. Now, some members of the ICG, as you know, represent very large communities. That's the case of Mohammed and myself, and others less so. I cannot speak for the others, not even for Mohammed, who is unfortunately not on this call. So I can only speak for myself, so in saying that I have adopted this position as a matter of principle, because I think it is not proper, at least I would not be comfortable with taking part actively in the discussions and perhaps even having some influence on them if I'm efficient, and then taking that away and to work, having to work on it on the ICG. I may be wrong, but at least that's my personal position, and I cannot speak on behalf of my colleagues.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, Jean-Jacques Subrenin. And that's indeed a question that I was also asking myself. It's Olivier speaking, and I certainly have seen some members of the ICG involved, but I haven't raised the point because I think it's been the case also in the IETF and in the RIRs, and we do have a few more people at hand, active people, to be able to go to all of these various committees, but it seems that others have had the similar people involved in the actual discussions in the different operational communities and also sitting on the ICG. I don't want to spend so much time on this, but Jean-Jacques, you have the last word on this.
Hello?
Yes, proceed forward, Jean-Jacques Sabona.
Oh, thank you. Yes, Olivier, since you bring up this question in another form, I'd like to answer very clearly. Why am I applying the principle I just explained to CERN a moment ago? It is because of the ALAC. For other parts of the community, the situation may be different, but you remember that the ALAC had a very clear procedure in order to select its two representatives, and this was made available to the whole ICG membership, that we are not individuals who have been jockeying to, you know, to push forward some agenda, I don't know, but we are there really to express the views of the ALAC, to make sure that the preoccupations of the global internet user are properly taken into account. And that I take as my primary duty. Now, of course, in addition to that, it is also my duty to be as well informed as possible. And that's why it's a great help for me to be on today's call and all these at large ad hoc working group calls, and I will attend some of the other calls for the other working groups, but as I said, I do not intend to actively participate, except perhaps to avoid factual mistakes. Thank you. Does that answer your question, Olivier?
And this is Terry from staff. Olivier, we're unable to hear you at this time.
And it would probably help if I unmuted myself. Yeah, thank you. That's a good point. I was wondering. I was just saying, Jean-Jacques, yes, thank you for this explanation. I did note a disapproval or a red cross from Cheryl Langdonora. I wasn't quite sure to what point she was disagreeing.
I can take that if you so desire.
Just a minute, please.
Sure,
go ahead.
I was just disagreeing, Cheryl, for the record. I was disagreeing from a personal point of view, having acted in the best interest of, as well as representative for, the ALAC in a number of equally important forums. I think that whilst I understand Jean-Jacques' perspective on this, I disagree with it, so I was indicating that I disagree with it. I think one is also required to act in the best interest of and not just be a representative in the more purest sense of only bringing forward what one is said. But that's my view, and I'm not actually a member of the ALAC, so that doesn't really matter. Thank you.
Yes, thanks for this, Cheryl. In the way that you mentioned acting in the best interest of, does this basically mean that you're not commanded to say X, Y, or Z, but do make also judgment calls yourself.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I see Jean-Jacques and Alan Greenberg. So we'll take the two people in the queue. Jean-Jacques Sebrenat.
Olivier, this is Jean-Jacques. Could I defer first to Alan because he may have remarks to which I would answer also, as well as to Cheryl. Thanks.
Sure. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you, Alan speaking. I think the words that Cheryl used of judgment call are critical, but in a wider sense than she said. The decision on whether we need our representatives to actively participate at all will depend to some extent on how the world unfolds. If the ICG is given definitive proposals that it simply needs to integrate into a document, and there's no real decision process, there's no need to send things back or negotiate with any of the people submitting things, then that may well be a good position. On the other hand, we put people on that group who we think can stand their territory and take positions as necessary, and whether those positions are personal judgment calls or there's an opportunity to vet them and discuss with AWAC, the latter is certainly preferable to the former. The former might ultimately be necessary in any given time. So I prefer the individual members not to just make raw judgment calls on their own if there's an opportunity to discuss. And if there are substantive issues that will have to be determined or decided by the ICG, then I would hope that we would have active participation in coming to closure on those, if they're issues that matter to the AWAC and to users. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Jean-Jacques Sebrenat.
Thank you, Olivier, and thank you both Cheryl and Alan for your remarks. Listening to you carefully, I have the impression that there may be a slight misunderstanding because of the way I presented things. Of course, in the ICG, it is total commitment and complete expression of views. When these views have been vetted by the AWAC before I express them, and that is the best case, so much the better. If for a matter of urgency I do not have the possibility of consulting the AWAC, then I give a position on my own judgment. What I was talking about was not within the ICG. I was talking about the working groups, you know, the sub-working groups, as it were, which are not within the ICG, and one about transition and the other about accountability. It is in that context that, fortunately, the at-large has many representatives in the various groups, and they are following that clearly. So I will try to follow that the best I can, but will not intervene in those subgroups unless I find that it's necessary, perhaps, for the accuracy of data to intervene. But I repeat, within the ICG, I take my role fully, as Cheryl was and Alan were suggesting, and I couldn't think of it in any other way, of course. Thanks.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. And closing, Alan Greenberg, please.
Yeah, thank you very much. I certainly have no problem with that. That is not taking part in the working groups developing the plans at the same time as you're sitting on the ICG. But you know, within the boundaries of what I was saying before, that I do not find problematic. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay, well, thanks for this clarification, and I do realize time is ticking, and the next thing we need to do is to have a quick update on what is happening in the other operational communities, first in the RIRs and also with the Internet Society, IETF, see how they are proving and moving forward, basically. So for an update, I see Alberto Soto, who is in many of these mailing lists. And so, Alberto, I would be very grateful if we could have an update. Alberto, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Olivier. This is Alberto Soto for the record. The more active part was in LACNIC. There was a meeting in Chile. There were two sessions, a two-hour session devoted to the IANA transition topic. On the first session, the Brazilian government said that the transition should be carried out as it was suggested, respecting the multi-stakeholder model. ABNIC presented, or they say that it's a political topic, therefore it should be taken into account, and they say that no modification, no technical modification should be carried out if these modifications somehow affect the stability and functioning. LACNIC also agrees with this. They believe in the bottom-up model. The RIRs do not have any issue with ICANN or whether ICANN should continue or not with the process, the oversight process that is carrying out. During the second session, LACNIC, or let me rephrase, in the second session, there was a consultation process. In this session, there was a paper presented, and LACNIC take the APNIC proposal, and it complements the or supplements the proposal. They propose the creation of a working group, and they say that the oversight should be exercised by an oversight number council, and this should be composed of representatives of the civil society, the private sector, governments, and the technical communities. Then they should sign with ICANN an affirmation of commitment replacing the charters of 2007 and 2009. Accountability would be assured by or guaranteed by the representation of the different multi-stakeholders. There was a very active participation of members and also very active remote participation, and this proposal is also being supported by many members of the RIR, and there are some concerns regarding the composition, but they will discuss this later on. The RIRs have until the first week of December to present their proposals. They should be these proposals should be considered by the committee. The RIR committee, and their proposal will be filed to the delivered to the ICG on the proper time. As for the other mailing list, there are no other activities. There are no activities that are important to mention by now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Alberto. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. Just to ask you on this, so it's as far as the different RIRs are concerned, is it the idea that they would all coordinate and maybe they would all be proposing this number oversight council, or are we still far away from reaching such a discussion?
This is Alberto Soto for the record. The proposal is that NAMBER and NONG sign an agreement with ICANN, and they carry out the supervision or the oversight all together. This, they are discussing this, and this is part of their concerns. But this is what they say should be finished before the first week of December.
Okay, well, good luck to that. It's Olivier speaking. It sounds like a lot of work on their hands as well. Sean Ojedeji, you had your hand up a little bit earlier. I'll let you speak, and then we'll move on to the other regions as well. Sean?
Yeah, this is Sean for the transcript record. I want to make a quick comment on the report given by Alberto. One of the comments is, the first thing I want to say is that, yes, something has been proposed, but it has not been, it does not necessarily mean that it has received general acceptance from all the IRLs, okay? So there has been quite a lot of comments about this particular proposal, some of which I also made within the AFINIC mailing list and also within the RN mailing list. So I think the good thing to do would be to look forward to, without necessarily repeating what has been said, look forward to what the composition of the proposed oversight committee is going to look like, and actually what they will be doing in respect to the oversight, the new oversight versus the existing NRO. Just want to give another quick one on AFINIC. AFINIC is going to be meeting. Oh, okay. I think if Tijani is on the list, I don't see Tijani. That's why I want to do this. Olivier, if you would permit me to give updates on AFINIC, then I can go ahead. But I don't see that Tijani is on the list. Okay.
Sean,
so good.
Please proceed forward, and then we'll have Cheryl after you. So please go forward with it.
Okay, thank you. For the AFINIC region, we're going to be having the public face-to-face starting on the 22nd. It's going to last till 28th. I think there's going to be IANA discussion on the 27th, and I'm also going to be on the panel for that. There has been two proposals that has been sent to the AFINIC mailing list. One was sent by Richard, and the other one was sent by myself, and I think I also forwarded it to the at-large IANA issues. So discussion on the mailing list has been quite not as very, very loud, but at the moment we're trying to, AFINIC is trying to, in consultation with the board, select the CRIPS member. So each IR is expected to select two members from the community, one from staff, to represent each region. There's a deadline that has been set, which is 15th of November. So everybody is supposed to be ready with their members, and then the Christian will be the ones that will prepare the transition proposal for numbers in consultation with the community. There is currently a set of questions that have been pushed forward to the AFINIC community, which is currently expecting responses. So that is the summary of status in the AFINIC region. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Sean. Next is Cheryl Langdonor.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Olivia. Cheryl from Transcript Records. Just briefly, and Sean's covered a lot of it, I've put in a couple of links that you may find useful. The APNIC list space has a blog which offers, a good explanation on the multi-state holder oversight number council, which is the proposal from LACNIC. But it also ensures and will make clear to our community. So I would like to see those links perhaps put into our wiki space, please, because it covers off the desire for an affirmation of commitment style relationship with this new proposed oversight body, etc. And of course, it will be, of course, up to the CRISP, which is what Sean was just describing, to also agree, as well as take any other modifications that may come in to the original and more primary proposal that we've looked at before, now modified by LACNIC and could very well be modified by the other NICs as they go through and do some fine-tuning on it. But ultimately it will be to the CRISP to come up with a coordinated cross-RIR approach. Thank you.
Very much for this, Cheryl. So now we've gone through the RIRs. Do we have anyone who has an update on what is going on in the protocols community? Don't see anyone putting their hands up at the moment. So I've been reading the IETF mailing list that deals with the IANA plan, and it looks as though the IETF has a plan moving forward. They have put together a paper which, again, there looks as though it's wanting to keep stability as being the primary concern, and therefore no major changes or changes altogether. The fact is that the U.S. government has to step away from a number of contracts, and so they've been looking at it, really seeing what needs to be removed from those contracts, how things need to be amended for this. But there is definitely no idea at the moment about the breaking up of all of the different functions and breaking up of IANA. On the other hand, there has been a discussion with regards to the ownership of IANA.org and of IANA itself. And there have been some saying that since the IANA functions predate ICANN altogether, then the IANA functions should be put under a trusteeship of the Internet Society or of some other organization. And that has been a bit of a heated discussion because some disagree with it and some agree with it. So the discussion is still unclear at the moment and has reached no consensus on this point. I don't know what the default is. I would imagine that the default is that nothing changes. But certainly the discussion is on the table at the moment. Eduardo Diaz, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. This is a wonderful record. In lieu of what you're saying about this heated discussion in ISOC, which I wasn't aware of, does that have to do with the fact that I have read in another...
Not in ISOC. In the IETF. In the IETF mailing list.
Does that have to do with another mail that I read about, some... domain names that were delegated pre-IANA by Joe Postel, and they belong under the California law? I mean, is that related? Thank you.
Thank you, Eduardo. Yeah, the discussion, it's Olivia speaking, the discussion has gone into such tangential directions that some have come back to John Postel, indeed, and speaking about some... IP allocations, some protocol allocations that predated all this, and then some came back to 1970, which is apparently when the IANA term was first used. I don't think the discussion is going to lead anywhere. Personally, my personal feeling is it's not going to get anywhere. And of course, there are some who are trying their chance right now at saying that of course, all of these protocols are for the Internet qualifier, but you could also have different protocols that are not Internet. The usual stories of various people, various names who you might remember or recognize, and that usually troll around all of these discussions, asking for multiple routes, et cetera, et cetera. Eduardo Diaz, back to you.
Yes, thank you. This is Eduardo again. Just a follow-up on that. So just to understand, some of the things that, I read in the emails and sometimes I get confused. Are these domains that we're talking about, top-level domains, are what they are called the supplemental ones or supplementary ones that are like different from the ones that happened after IANA started? This is just to understand that terminology. Thank you.
Thanks for this, Eduardo. We're not speaking domains, we're speaking protocol here. This is the IETF.
Naming
issues are on a different working group. Yeah, and thankfully, we haven't reached that point yet. Also, although there have been discussions with regards to CCTLDs, obviously, and that's another can of worms. Here we are dealing with the ownership of IANA and the stewardship of IANA itself, as since it's not under the U.S. government anymore, some are saying it should go under ISOC, since it was in ISOC in the early 90s that the mention of IANA was made, and others retorted by saying, actually, no, the discussion about IANA started even earlier than the early 90s. So far, I would just say a non-event for the time being, and we'll see how that develops through the forthcoming weeks. Let's move on in our agenda. I note that the time is ticking, and so we've had some feedback on of all of what's been going on outside in the other operational communities, and now we can have a look at the developments within our own operational community, and that's, of course, the naming operational community. You've got two agenda items relating to this, and five and six, which are likely to, I think, be merged, in effect. I thought we'd have them both separately, but, of course, the call has just taken place now. If we can, the call effectively discuss, the call linked to in five, effectively discuss the matters which are in agenda item number six. So that's how we are. Maybe the easiest way is for us to go through agenda item number six and get feedback on the process or on the level where we are right now. And what I was going to suggest is to start with a principles and criteria document, which was discussed on the CWG call. And Fatima Campanero, I understand, has done some work on this and can provide us with a quick update, please. And I hope I'm still on the call, because there is an enormous storm out there. I still am. Good.
You are still on the call, Alan.
Deluge of water outside. I might end up swimming.
This is Fatima Cambronero. Thank you, Olivier. How much time do I have to speak about this topic?
You have a couple of minutes, Fatima. So Olivier speaking.
Fatima speaking. Okay. So I will speak about the background and the context of this. In the cross-community working group call, there was an action item, which was to send this draft regarding the principles. This document would be circulated to the different lists, and then we would decide if we would continue to discuss the document or not. We had two sets of principles. One of them had to do with the working principles of the working group, and the other set of principles have to do with the transition. Many of the members said that we shouldn't waste time in the debating these principles, because the principles were already enshrined and contained in the NTAA announcement that we already know. Based on that action item, what we did was to circulate two drafts to the list. There was a draft on the principles of this cross-community working group and with the operating principles of this working group. If you want, I can speak about this. But if not, let me tell you that there is another draft regarding the criteria where all the issues related to the DNA transition are contained. This was sent to the list for revision and for discussion today. We received only two comments, and today there were two comments as well in this call. And before discussing the document, I would like to say two things. The GAC, the Governmental Advisory Committee, is working on its own principles, and they will circulate these principles. They will share the principles with the group for discussion. And today, they said that they sent this draft, that the group sent this draft to the GAC for them to consider the document as well. In the meeting in Los Angeles regarding the IANA transition, some of these principles, high-level principles, were discussed, and we are working on that. Now, specifically on the document that we are now seeing on the screen, the document is divided into an introduction, and then you will see five main principles, and there are sub-principles within each principle. In the introduction, as you can see, these principles and criteria are intended to be the basis on which decisions on the transition of the steward are formed. This means that before the proposal is sent to the coordination group, this proposal will have to comply with all these criteria and principles. These five principles contained in the document are, and I will mention them, and then I will analyze them one by one, stability, security and stability, B, oversight, accountability and transparency, rendición de cuentas in Spanish, I mean accountability, and this is for the translator. Then this is point number C, service levels, policy-based, diversity of IANA's customers, and that is number letter E, diversity of IANA's customers. When it comes to principle A, security and stability, changes should not be undermined, should not undermine the operation of the IANA function. Changes should be the minimum needed to assure accountability and good stewardship of the service. This is the draft. Mari Uduma made a comment suggesting to add the word objectivity. I'm sorry, but I got lost. So the word objectivity should be added in this paragraph. That is the comment received by Mary. Now, when it comes to principle B, regarding oversight, accountability, and transparency, this principle is divided into six other principles: transparency, independence of oversight, independence of policy from IANA, protection against capture, performance against service level commitments, and against the agreed policy base, and six, appeals. Now, let's analyze them in detail. When it comes to number one, transparency, the document reads, transparency is a prerequisite of accountability. While there might be commercial confidentiality concerns or concerns over operational continuity during any process of delegation or redelegation of a TLD, the final decision and the rationale for that decision should be made public or at least be subject to an independent scrutiny as part of the ex post assessment of service performance. When it comes to this first principle, no comments were received, and I personally believe there is nothing to change here. When it comes to item number two regarding independence of oversight, it reads, and we had several questions and comments, the draft document reads as follows. Oversight should be independent of the IANA functions operators and should assure the accountability of the operator to the global multi-stakeholder community. That is what it is in the draft document. Now, there are some comments. Comments said that if the independence of oversight is contained within the principles that we are discussing right now, of if this is an open issue. And why do they say that? Because in the announcement made by the NTIA, well, they speak about this oversight and the independence, and some people believe that we are repeating the concept. Some other comment that was received had to do with adding the word inclusive after operator and global. So the document should read, oversight should be independent of the IANA functions, operators, and the addition of this word, inclusive, is correct from my point of view. And there is also a redundancy, or another comment referred to a redundancy in the concept. Well, from my point of view, this would not be a problem because we are somehow reinforcing the principle, and there is no issue with that. Now, when it comes to the third item in terms of independence of policy from IANA, the draft document reads that the IANA operator should be independent of the policy processes. Its role is to implement changes in accordance with the policy agreed through the relevant bottom-up policy process. This principle has a note reading that this does not presuppose any model for separation of the policy and IANA roles. The current contract already requires such separation. We received comments on these principles, and they said that this note contradicts somehow the concept of the principle, because we, in the very beginning, it speaks about a separation, and then the note says that this does not presuppose any separation. So we need to review the note and perhaps modify the wording of the note. Now, when it comes to protection against capture, the document reads that safeguards need to be in place to prevent capture of the service and of any oversight or stewardship function. There were no comments on this point. From my opinion, perhaps we should define the concept of safeguards so as to avoid any misunderstanding in the future. But that is my personal opinion, and of course, it's up to you to discuss it or not. When it comes to number five, performance against service level commitments and against the agreed policy base, the document reads that this should be monitored and there should be a mechanism to ensure the failures are corrected. We received a comment by Chuck Gomez reading that the second part of this principle is an action item, but not an assessment criteria, in fact. So he believes that the first part could be considered as a principle, but that we should change the wording so as to have a principle, and that the second part of this drafting have to do with the action and operation. Of course, this is open to clarification or to further comment. And we received another document requesting to add at the end of this principle the provision for a shutdown or a total failure of the service. From my personal point of view, well, this is not clear to me whether this is a principle or if this has to do with the function. And, of course, we can review it. When it comes to item number six, this is appeals. The document reads that in cases of any significant and irreversible decision, for example, in case of redelegations, there should be an appeals process open to the key parties, and this should be open to public scrutiny. We received a comment asking for or asking to add the word unfair in case of any significant, unfair, or irreversible decision. And there is another comment asking for the addition of another type of wording. I do agree with these comments, and when it comes to the appeal process, well, we already speak about this. When it comes to item number 6, service levels, we receive no relevant comments. I will mention them very briefly. The performance of the IANA functions must be carried out in a reliable, timely, and efficient manner. It is a vital service, and any proposal should ensure a continuity of service over the transition and beyond, meeting a recognized and agreed quality of service and in line with service level commitments. We have three items. Number one, service level commitments should be adaptable to developing needs and subject to continued improvement. Number two, reads the process should be automated for all routing functions. And point number three, reads service quality should be audited ex post review against agreed commitments. There were no comments on this point, and I personally believe there is no issue with it. When it comes to principle C, related to policy-based...
30 seconds, please, because you have taken a bit of a time taking us through this document, and we have to discuss or have an update on a few other things. So, Olivia, please.
This is Fatima. Olivier, I will finish very briefly. This is Fatima for the record. So when it comes to these last topics, policy-based service levels and diversity of IANA customers, well, we had no relevant comments. When it comes to item E regarding diversity of IANA customers, there is a paragraph referred to CCTLDs. So in this case, the context of this paragraph was the CCTLD regional organization from Europe. So this should be taken into account. When it comes to next steps, well, we have a 2 days period to receive comments for this document. This document was drafted by Martin Boyle. So he will be in charge of consolidating all the comments that will be received in this call and in the next 2 days, and then there would be a document drafted to discuss in the face-to-face meeting. And to sum up and finish, I want to say two things. I don't see in this document anything referred to Internet users, and, of course, I volunteer, if you want, I volunteer to compile all the comments and to send that information to the list to be included in the following or in the next draft. I'm sorry for taking too much time for this. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Fatima. It's Olivier speaking. And you mentioned not seeing anything about Internet and users on this. So here's a question quickly to our working group. Should there be a mention of end users in those principles and criteria? Cheryl Engdonor.
Thank you, Olivier. Cheryl, for the record, it's a slightly more complicated question than might be thought. In the principles, I could argue either way, and the reason I could argue either way is that we really, I believe, should be supporting a clear focus primarily on the security, stability, et cetera, of the Internet and, of course, the IANA relationship with its customers, if we have to use that term, which I don't like, but never mind, that's what's being used. Where the end users, for example, come into far more greater need for being enshrined into this sort of documentation is often at the level, for example, where if you're looking at the interpretation of the 1591 and you're looking at delegation and re-delegation, then you look at what used to be called internet community, local internet community, now referred to as significantly interested parties, and that's been defined elsewhere. And I'm fairly comfortable that that's far more granular and detailed inclusion of internet end users and indeed other stakeholders, even though they may not actually be internet end users, is pretty robust and strong. So I just want to put that clear stake in the ground that I could argue either way, and to be honest, I think we're pretty well cared for, providing those interpretations of 1591 are enshrined as annexes. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheryl, it's Olivier speaking. So I take it from what you said is that, yes, we should have.
But I think it actually is. I'm not sure it needs to be specifically articulated in the principle.
Okay.
Sorry, that was Cheryl not being clear, but I have been up all night talking to people.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Cheryl. Olivier speaking. I note from Jimmy Schultz, who put in the chat, that yes, there should be an inclusion of internet end users. We've got a queue with Alan Greenberg and then Jean-Jacques Subrenard. Alan, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. It's Alan speaking. Two comments. I'm really not in favor of what I would call gratuitous references to users. That is, construing something just to make sure the word users is included. I don't think that enhances our credibility or makes the document any better. The second thing is, we bring two things to the table, and you know, we have essentially demanded that we are part of this process. Part of what we bring to the table is a user perspective. The other part that we bring to the table is not being part of the domain industry and the overall group that runs the, quote, runs the Internet. So we bring a sense of independence to the process, and you look at things which may not concern end users directly, but we might look at that and say, that's not healthy. And that part, I think, at the level of these principles, and in fact at a lot of the IANA transition issues, is our main role, not so much pursuing the end user pursuing an independent view of what's going on, and is this reasonable or is it adversely, unreasonably favoring some party or other that is part of the formal process. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Simon. Next is Jean-Jacques Subrenard.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques. I like Alan's characterization of what he calls gratuitous references. Indeed, I think we can't indulge in the pleasure of putting, end user everywhere. I also take Cheryl's point. However, under the principles which we have on the screen, under D, policy-based, I wonder whether we couldn't touch up small 2 again, out non-discriminatory and putting something like the needs, the requirements of the global internet user, etc., etc., or to simply add, comma, especially require from the point of view of the global internet user. Thank you.
Thanks for this, Jean-Jacques. So just adding a point on there. I'll let Fatima Cambronero come back to you on this. Fatima, you have the floor.
Fatima speaking. Thank you very much, Olivier. I just wanted to clarify that it was part of my duty to comment that this phrase, end users, was not included, so as we as a group can consider that and debate that. I would say that I agree with Alan's comments, and personally, it's not clear to me if this document will be part of the proposal or not, because depending on that, I believe we should push to include these phrase end users or global end users. I did not find any information about this. I don't know if this will be included in the proposal or how this document will be used. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Fatima. Next is Adam Greenberg.
Thank you. I actually like what Jean-Jacques said. It would be nice but probably naive to presume that the term bottom-up multi-stakeholder includes users. I note we still don't have a seat at the table at the GNSO. So pushing for some level of user involvement in the policy base may well be something that we want to do.
Okay, thanks very much for this, Alan. I do realize we've got 6 minutes until the end of this call. We haven't even touched on the CWG's subgroups, RFP. Let's put this on the side and try and see if we can add a user, end user element. The concern I have at the moment is that when we were in Part D, when it says policy-based, decisions should be based on policy agreed through the recognized bottom-up multi-stakeholder processes. I interpret this as being the, and this is, of course, in the naming side of things, I interpret this as being the ICANN way of doing things with the SOs and ACEs, etc. So that obviously includes end users, includes governments, includes everyone on there. So I'm not quite sure that it's that much of an important thing to add end users listed in that overall scheme of things. Otherwise, we might start wanting to include registrars, registries, intellectual property rights holders, non-commercial stakeholders, governments, and start listing the whole lot. And that probably would be more detrimental than just keeping it at that. Let's continue that discussion on the mailing list. I don't want to finish the call without touching on a quick update on the RFP subgroups. As you know, work is taking place in those subgroups with the RFP 1, 2A, 2B, 2C, and then 3, which is going to be the bulk of the work and the bulk of the battle, I believe. That's where some of the issues that are quite controversial will be discussed. And so let's start with RFP 1 quickly. I see that Terry is uploading it. Hopefully we can have it on the screen in a matter of seconds. And RFP 1 is effectively the... So there was a group 1 and 2A and 2B that started out. And RFP 1 is just a description of the community's use of the INF function. It's a detailed description of how the what the INF function does, etc. It's got a description of the function and the customers of the function and what registries are involved, etc., etc. And number two is a detailed review of the pre-transition arrangements and pointing out all the different policy sources for the country codes, the top-level domains, for the generic top-level domains, etc. And RFP2B provides details of the existing pre-transition arrangements on the oversight and with regards to oversight and accountability. So that's the current things. The current three pieces of work that are being worked on, RFP 1 is pretty much finished and has been presented to the cross-community working group, and 2A has also been presented and some feedback is now to be collected. 2B, I think, is on its way. 2C, it will probably be sent out by tomorrow sometime. And I wondered whether there were any questions or comments on these. I can't see any of them being uploaded at the moment. Terry, are you faced with problems or?
Number one was uploaded, and then when I heard you say number two, I started uploading number two.
You just jumped between one and the other. Okay.
Just let me know which one you want up, and I'll put it back.
We haven't got, well, let's just go to one quickly, if we can. I just want to show you the document. We don't have the time to read through it, obviously, and it would be doing double duty. Chuck Gomez has very well gone through the paper during the cross-community working group call just a few hours ago, and as soon as the recording is up, perhaps we could publicize it on our mailing list, and you can listen to his explanation of how this all came together. But this one is so the first track here, it's just a few paragraphs on the community use of the IANA functions and how this all works together, and with details of the different functions, list of IANA functions used by the naming community. There's a good, important table that is there, and then it goes into the actual functions themselves, deeper into the actual functions themselves. I would say much of this is actually based on SAC 67 and SAC 68, which are the SAC papers. Part of the terminology is taken from there. Part of it was taken from the original IANA paperwork and the way that things are discussed in the GNSO. So I think that paper doesn't really need much change or anything. Are there any questions or comments on RFP Section 1? No question or comments. Okay, let's go quickly through RFP number Section 2A then, please. So there we are with 2A. Now this one looks at the overall proposals, the relevant sources of the different policies. A pretty incredible document, and for this there's several people that worked on that very well indeed. Bernard Turcotte, Chuck Gomez, and also Kieran McCarthy spent an enormous amount of time on that, looking at the different sources and so on. I don't think there is anything significant that we need to change in that or that we need to ask to change on this. These are just what the sources of policy are, how processes work, and it's pretty detailed as far as the different arrangements that might be, or different actions that might be asked for from IANA. Delegation, redelegation, changes to the root zone, etc. And as you've got a table here which goes in detail as to who does what, ICANN staff, ICANN board, GNSO, registry operator, NTIA, and IANA. These are the different points. I would highly encourage that you read through this paper so that we can form an idea of whenever the U.S. government is going away somewhere, do we need to put something in replacement of this? That's, of course, RFP number 3 that we'll be discussing this. Any questions on RFP Section 2A subgroup? I don't see anyone having put their hand up. Okay. So that's the second one. I would again encourage that you read through it. And then 2B, I believe, is due in by the end of the week. I note that Sean has mentioned in the chat. So 2B will be at the end of the week. And just as a reminder, 2B will be the existing pre-transition arrangements as far as oversight and accountability is concerned. That's going to be particularly important. And then 2C will be the triage. And that's a complicated one. INA functions contract triage, that work even hasn't started yet, as far as I know. So it's futile to be speaking about it. Eduardo, you might know a little bit, actually, since you are on that group. Eduardo Diaz, you have the floor.
This is Eduardo. I just put a link to the set of documents that have to do with UT triage, and the last one and most latest one was from October the 28th, and basically it's a list of all the contract items of the IANA contract, and there, you know, they're identifying if it has an operation side or is an accountability side, if it can be, if that item can be enhanced or not. Basically, that first work is there, and my belief is that we're waiting for the other groups to finish to see how we can see if this thing can be more fine-tuned. But it's a very long document. It's complicated.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for this, Eduardo. Thank you. And then, of course, it's Olivier speaking. Then, of course, we've got RFP 4, 5, and 6, and these haven't even started yet. So, in essence, I just wanted to open the floor to ask whether there were any questions or comments on any of these this work. I know that we have people in all of the subgroups now. So, what I will probably ask is in the future just an update on the work. But obviously, I think that all of us should be in RFP 3 because that will be the, you know, the post-transition oversight and accountability arrangement is going to be the big discussion here, and this is due to take place within the next 15 days, if I understand correctly. Any comments or questions on this process?
Olivia, Cheryl here. With the importance of three, whether or not staff should promulgate the first meeting of that subgroup, which will be coming up later this week on the Thursday, I believe. It's the hour for me. I can look it up. But do you want everyone potentially involved and engaged there, or do you want to keep at arm's length watching brief via this group? What do you want to do?
Yes, thanks very much for this, Cheryl. It's Olivier speaking. So, indeed, there will be a first call of RFP 3 at 14 to 15.30 UTC on Thursday, the 6th of November, so in 2 days' time, 1400 to 15.30 UTC first call. I'm not going to mandate that we all go on this, but if you do have the time for it, that would be good, because it will certainly save us from having to repeat ourselves on this part. And at the moment, it looks like it's going to be slightly messier than RFP 1 and 2. It would be good to have a good showing on there. And maybe we can have an action item, yes, of staff to forward the invitation for the first RFP 3 call to our IANA issues mailing list. Terry, I'm not even sure whether you have that invitation.
For the RFP 3?
Correct, yes.
Yes, I believe we do have access to that information. Is this... It's by membership only, though, you can join the call, correct? So only if you're a member can you join.
I don't believe that's the case, Olivier.
Thank you, Cheryl. Olivier speaking. As you can hear from my voice, I don't know. I think it's probably open. I would imagine it's open. I don't think it's meant by membership. It's always a big question, but... I think that ultimately, let's just have it. I tell you what, if you can leave out the staff for it. Yeah.
At least a participant, yeah.
As long as one is a participant, or a member of the cross-committee working group, I don't see why there should be a blocking of participants. If you can please, let's ask staff, so if Terry could please check with staff running the call, I believe Grace, then, but I think that's, it must be an open call.
Certainly, I can do that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that's, thank you for this suggestion, Cheryl. That's a very good point. And I realize we are 8 minutes beyond the end of this call. Unfortunately, I also have a hard stop. But we have gone through the work items, as RFP 4, 5, and 6 are currently not, haven't moved very much yet. And then building our at-large positions, we will probably know more after the RFP 3 call. So what I would suggest is to have a call next week that will focus specifically on a couple of things. If our call is in the first part of the week, then the ICG call, the IANA Coordination Group call, is on the 12th, which is on Wednesday. So it will happen afterwards, in which case we could just concentrate on the work of RFP 3. Or if it happens at the second part of the week, then we would be both discussing the ICG update and also RFP 3. Are there any preferences? Let's go for a call in the second part of the week. Let's aim for either Wednesday or Thursday for a call, if you're all okay with this. Eduardo Diaz.
Just to be aware that Thursday, there is the CWG call every Thursday. Just.
As well. Okay, that's right. So maybe. Okay, let's do our next call in the early part of the week. And so we'll be able to spend more time on RFP 3, and then we'll have a call in the week after discussing the CWG and discussing the ICG. I see people are asking for Wednesdays and so on. Staff will send out a doodle and we'll work something out. Probably the easy way out of this. Okay, any other business or questions? So, Olivia speaking, just to remind you all, we've got some RFP to read. They're quite interesting, and I have found it to be very helpful in understanding the issues and certainly building up on SAC 67 and SAC 68. I have asked our SAC liaison on how SAC 69 will be coming across our doorstep, and I have been told that it's quite unlikely for it to be ready anytime soon. So we're on 68 and 67 for the time being. And with this, I thank you all for having been on this call. I note that a lot of people have to go to their next call, and I, as I said, I've got a hard stop. So thanks for this. We've got several action items that are there. Staff will follow up with the action items and forward them to the mailing list as well, and adding everything on the wiki page. And with this, this call is now adjourned. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you,
and thanks to Veronica for the interpretation that she has done today all by herself. Well done.
Congratulations and well done, Veronica. Bye.
This is Veronica. Thank you, Olivia, and thank you, Cheryl.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Have a great rest of your day. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines.